Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
We'll get his thoughts on the ALDS. I'm getting choked up. Just we're at that point of the season.
The heck was that? You're getting so the Browns are making you emotional too.
I believe there was a pierogi in my throat. That was probably I just finished up lunch. If you're asking why lunch at four, it's because quite frankly I didn't eat it earlier. I don't really eat dinner till like 8 or 9 o'clock now because of the show. I don't know. I'm getting so defensive about this, but it's a football Friday. It is an F off Friday. We got Jim to talk the ALDS coming up, but we're talking about the Browns right now. And we're having this conversation. You say you've got a good feeling about this game on Sunday. I'm saying I will ignore every feeling that I have about the Browns until they make me believe again. And I think that does lead us to the Browns' opportunity on Sunday, which I think for a lot of people, I'm not sure I'm there, but for a lot of people has saved their damn season.
I think it 100% feels that way, and I think it has to. Like, if you get, and that's the power of what kind of why I asked that question to Jason, like the idea that one win, it is kind of amazing in that sport, man. Like, one win can fix a lot of problems that you have. Even like, we've rattled off all the issues they've had. Pre-snap penalties, just penalties in general. Deshaun struggles, obviously. Guys dropping passes. The offensive line not being able to block anybody. Like, all these different things. But it's funny how, like, you get one, and it can there's a momentum that almost builds. It can almost become like an avalanche where you just there's a confidence shift, and it changes so many different things about the way that you're playing because you feel better about it. And I don't know, like, maybe that's part of it too, is like, I just see the power that a win like this could have for this team given how they started the season. And again, it's not that I trust them. I'm not going into this game like I'm not doing the Ken Carmen guaranteeing kids that they're going to win the game. I just, there's something that makes me feel like...
Should we go the other way? Should you maybe talk to elders? Like, get a couple people from an old folks home and guarantee them a win? 216-474-0092.
I don't want to be responsible for anybody at an old person's home dying this weekend because I guaranteed a win and then they, you know, have some health issue and they pass away.
If you are around a bunch of elderly people, if you work at a retirement home, if they would like Spencer German to guarantee a win and you'd like to leverage them and their desire to see another win before they expire, please call in now, 216-474-0092. They're not playing for their season on Sunday. This is desperate thinking. I understand the importance of a win. I'm not saying that this is not an important game. But the most overused phrase in the last 3 weeks, and quite frankly, I've used it too prematurely, is must win. Like, they got to just start playing better football. Like, yes, at some point that has to lead to wins. But, I'll be honest with you. If they have what effectively was, what was that, 2 weeks ago with Cincinnati, where it was the shootout, where it was, what, 38-33, If that's how this game goes, yeah, sure, I'm going to look at this and go, what the hell happened to the defense? But if I actually see this team come out and play a clean football game, the O-line looks better, Deshaun takes another jump, like, we're still at the point where the idea that this is a must-win or you have to save the season, that's not in line with reality. Like, yes, I understand the odds are against you if you lose this game, even more so to then go try and make the playoffs. Okay, but you can't, like, we can't put so much weight on one game. Right now, they need to just get back to playing consistently and playing consistently hard as a team together and playing clean football. Yes, wins matter, but their season isn't over if they lose this game.
I mean, I think talk to me in a couple weeks in terms of games that matter, in terms of like, is this the season or not? Because I think once you get
to this... You just said this is the season. They're playing for the season on Sunday.
Oh, I think we had a lot... There was something lost in translation there. I was kind of alluding back to the point why I feel good about it, but I said I understand why fans feel that way. But I'm with you. I mean, we started the show talking about which team needs to win more, the Guardians, the Browns, and I said the Guardians. And for that reason, like, yeah, there's still a chance you can dig yourself out of whatever hole you create for yourself if they add to that this weekend, because you still play a lot of AFC teams. You still play all your division games. Those are the things that are even more pressing. And so that's why I say, like, in a couple weeks, Bengals, Ravens, back-to-back, I think that's the stretch where we start having that conversation if the losing continues, because then you're talking about games that really matter in terms of tiebreakers in the AFC, but also within your division. Like, there's still a path where you win out in your division somehow, and these games are all ugly. Maybe they're ugly games. You muck it up a little bit because that's what AFC North football, as everyone always says, is. And then you're able to stack some wins and make some things happen. So, no, I don't think this game is for the season, but I do think fans will view it that way because they've already kind of lost a lot of hope with this team given how the last couple weeks have gone.
I just think I look at this and I think this is a great opportunity for the Browns, because I think it starts with, I think the Commanders are the 2018 Browns. And now this is a little different because we actually saw a young quarterback play good football before, like, the head coach got fired. But everybody's rooting for the... Now that Dan Snyder's been shipped off to his yacht in Italy permanently... with a $3 billion severance check. I think it was $7 billion, but still, who's counting? Now that Snyder's out of there, now that, you know, they've kind of been through the ringer, I think people are rooting for the Commanders. And I think Jaden Daniels, in the way he's playing, is so eye-popping. Every time we get a new young kid that could be that guy, that next guy, the great guy to challenge Pat Mahomes into Joe Burrow and get into that category, we get super excited. From that point alone, this is a great opportunity to change how people think about you.
Yeah.
Even if it's, again, not just by winning, but by truly playing your best game of the football. Well, I think that's part of the opportunity at stake right now.
Well, and listen, again, understanding that, yes, there is actually more to lose for this Browns team in terms of, like, the locker room and just the vibes around this team and all that. All the things that have gone on before with this franchise, I get that. That's part of the reason why I get this feeling of, like, they don't like they have nothing to lose. That's another element. It's another piece of the pie in terms of why I feel that way. Because, like you said, you laid it out perfectly. The people are rooting for the Commanders. They are the darling of the league. Everybody's excited about Jaden Daniels. They're like, of this new rookie class, he's the guy everyone's now paying attention to because he's looked good for the first 4 weeks of the season. Okay, so you're going into this game and it's like, it feels like you're almost playing with house money, because originally you probably would have been the team that people were looking at saying you should win this game, Washington stinks. Now it's the opposite. Nobody's expecting the Browns to do anything in this game. So if you go out and your defense looks like it did last year, you can generate some pressure and you can be the team that makes Jaden Daniels look like a rookie, and that then sort of lays the foundation or sets the stage for you to have a solid offense, at least a solid offensive game, maybe score 20 points for the first time and you walk out of there with a win. Not only does it change how people are viewing maybe Jaden Daniels, and they're like, okay, we got ahead of ourselves, it views how teams are going to feel about you now, because all of a sudden you beat the team that everyone's talking about.
Sorry, I saw something in the DMs. Here's what, well, while you were talking, I was thinking
like
about.
That was like somebody sent something.
It was a comment that I can't read on air that Mac put in the damn DMs here that caught my eye as we're talking here. While you were talking there, what I think stood out is the Browns are in a bizarre situation of having no expectations. Literally, no one trusts this team. Nobody believes in this team anymore.
Exactly. Yeah.
And yet, there's an insane amount of pressure because there are people calling out Deshaun Watson. They're kind of doing it in a dumb way because they said to bench the guy after he played his best game as a Cleveland Brown, or at least the best game of the season, but I digress. But there's a pressure of the criticism that comes with, still, the Deshaun trade. There's pressure of, there's a butt ton of money being paid to these guys in this locker room and has them spending a lot of time on this team. And the funny thing is, even though no one's expecting anyone, there's still the pressure of expectations and not meeting them. So, like, this is like the weirdest, wonkiest situation to walk into where no one thinks you're going to win. No one really believes in you. And yet, there, like, theoretically, there should be no pressure on the Browns. And yet, I look at this and go, no, it's Washington that's playing with house money. No one thought they'd start 2-1. No one thought Jaden Daniels would be this good this early. And with the Browns, it's still, if you lose, it's going to be, I get that Jaden Daniels is special, but at what point are you going to get your crap together? Like, this is just, it's again, it is a win situation. There is a win here, win the game. But it's just so wild that there are no expectations, and yet you still have all the pressure.
Yeah, and listen, I just think there's something to be said for, you're right, like in some respects, the fact that the Commanders are this good early on that nobody saw coming, it does kind of feel like from their perspective, I'm sure, like, hey, yeah, we're just playing with house money, whatever. But I do think there is cachet and pressure that comes with becoming this team that everybody's talking about. I mean, the Browns have been there plenty of times where, oh, this is the year the Browns finally get it right. This is the, and then they start that season and they have a bad year. And it's like, now everyone says never the next year, nobody's picking them to win again. And I think the same thing kind of applies here. Like through four games, this has been one of the top stories in the NFL, if not the top story in the NFL, how good Jaden Daniels has been. The fact that the Commanders are 3-1 and nobody saw it coming. And so that does carry some weight, even if, maybe it's not, maybe Washington fans don't necessarily view it that way, but I think there is a view like league-wide that like the Browns are going into this game like, okay, everyone's talking about them. We need to sort of shut that up and shut that down.
216-474-0092. Are the Browns playing for their season on Sunday? And I think, like, again, it's a no for me, but they are playing for so many things here, and there are so many things to gain other than just winning the damn game. And I think because Jaden is really, I mean, he's just caught this kind of soft spot for people around football. He's the darling of national media right now because of some of the numbers he's putting up. I think that's another shot for the defense to reprove themselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, Miles.
And it just feels like he's due for like what, like he's played so well. At some point, like, a rookie quarterback's going to come back to the mean at some point. Like, I'm not saying he can't still be a really good player.
But isn't that a generality, too? Isn't
probably,
that, like, a generic
probably,
statement?
Probably, but it just feels like...
I feel like everything we're talking about not, with this team okay, to pump ourselves up is a generality.
Here's maybe a better way to put it. I don't think... Like, it's rare that a rookie goes through a whole season and they just, like, dominate their way through the rookie season and everything's slowed down for them and they're great. Like, there's always bumps along the way. Even if he's going to be a historically great player throughout his career, I just think like there's bound to be some bumps in the road. Why can't this Browns team be one of those teams that creates the bump in the road?
I do like that the basic point that we're at here in this game is why not us? Like, I just, it's so weird that we've gone from Super Bowl Super Browns 4 weeks ago ahead of that Dallas game to, well, why couldn't he have a bad game against you? And by the way, again, you're not, none of the things you're saying are wrong, but I just think like, you know, it takes a lot to lose my trust when it comes to the Browns. They have perfected.
Well, sounds like they've lost your trust faster than they lost mine.
I mean, they've perfected it. They lost to two teams they had no business losing to, and they're 0-2 at home, and this is not tolerable. And so, like, I snapped. I was talking to Jason Stanford, middle of the segment, and I was like, you know what? I'm putting the defense on fraud alert because I'm done. I'm done giving them flowers. And I'm not mad, like, I'm sounding very severe about this.
I want to be clear. Like,
I'm not like doomsday about it, but at some point, bleep or get off the pot.
I want to be clear too. Like, I'm not sitting here trying to be like, oh, the defenses look great. Like, I'm not trying to tell you guys lies here. Like, I'm not like the defense is still really good and, you know, all the problems with Deshaun Watson are solved and Jack Conklin and Jet Wills might play this weekend. So the offense is fixed and, oh, here comes David Njoku. Maybe he's the reason. Maybe he'll catch all his passes and that'll solve that problem. There are a lot of problems, but this league is so week to week, man. Like, there are, like, sometimes all it takes is just that one win to get things back on track. And I just feel at some point, like, the Browns are going to get there. At some point, they're not going to keep, I just don't envision a world where they keep playing this poorly. I get it can happen, but we saw that in 2017. We saw that in 2016. But this team is too talented to just keep on losing this ugly and this miserably the entire season. So at some point, it's going to come together and lead to wins. Even if it's only 1, 2, 3, 4 more wins, It's got to happen. So
talent's not why they're losing. And that's why I am where I am. Are the Browns playing for their season on Sunday? And woulda, coulda, shoulda. It's okay to say this if you're in Cleveland on 92.3 The Fan. And remind him that we're going to go ahead and have him on. That seems like something a responsible person would do. Meanwhile, you guys can win a pair of tickets to see the Cavs take on the Pacers Thursday, October 10th at 7 p.m. at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse. Get registered to win by entering the word, let's see, scroll on the way down here. This is totally a great way to do it. Moon, M-O-O-N, at 923thefan.com. By the end of our show, get registered. It's all from Cleveland, from the Cleveland Cavaliers and Sports Radio 92.3 The Fan. Something might want to overthink, rethink, or underthink. Any of the things, really, how we do that. Because that was a pain in the butt to read. That's not really a shot
fired. Is it because they put like all the words there and you have to figure out which one's your time?
Yeah, it feels like it might be easier to do that by day instead of having to scroll down to Friday at the end of the week. But I'm not complaining. I am complaining. Did you watch Thursday Night Football last night?
I caught some bits and pieces. I was sort of more in tune with the Mets. The Mets... Brewers? Yeah, Brewers game. That was coming on. I forgot.
Clearly very in tune.
No, I was...
The Mets and that other team.
That other team that plays baseball in Milwaukee. No, yeah, I was paying more attention to that, and then I jumped over to the football game a little bit later.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was working on some stuff, so I wasn't like completely in tune with it. It was a good game, though.
You know what, though? Real quick on that. So I just... It really wasn't. Can we get a happy medium?
It was a good ending, I should say.
Yeah, no. That's fair. But like... Through most of the game, I was watching it, and it was like massive cushion coverage, so it was like the easiest like 15-yard completions. Like, honestly, it felt like... So everybody's complained about how ugly these games have looked and how bad offenses have looked. We swung the pendulum
so
in
Nick
the
Hayes
opposite.
Scoring is the...
No, but it is... There, this was
only person who watches football who wants a real defensive brouhaha on
this
the screen
was,
every
no,
week.
No. That football is ugly. But this is just as ugly. There was no tackling, missed tackles everywhere, cushion coverage. It was honestly like, it was like 7-on-7s. That's what it looked like.
But you know what makes that look pretty? When a bunch of drives end in touchdowns. Then you forget about all the, you're like, oh, there was a lot of missed tackles on the drive. But hey, there was a touchdown, and they're going back and forth, and then a team wins in overtime.
No.
So that's exciting football to me.
No, I got it. So... It just wasn't pretty football
Here's
for
the
most
thing.
Of the
if
game.
If both teams suck, if both teams are missing tackles and both teams are having the same problems, to me, that's a good football game. It's not like the Browns where it looks like just one team is really struggling at these things. When both teams are doing that and it leads to a lot of scoring, that's exciting.
I actually don't think both teams suck. I think both teams were gassed. I think you saw the schedule catch up to teams for the first time on Thursday Night Football. And I actually will give you...
I think most of these Thursday games have been pretty bad, actually.
I actually think we've had better matchups in Thursday Night Football.
They have had better matchups, but I don't think any of the games have been that good.
So that's not really where we're going, but I'll disagree with you just at a point. But I think your point is true that at least we got some offense last night. And I'll be honest, I was kind of blown away that Baker only had like 180 yards passing last night. He did have 3 touchdowns. I thought it was over 200. I thought it was up closer to 250. So when I saw Kirk Cousins passed for 500 yards plus and Baker passed for 180, I was like, I felt like you during the Mets and the whoever game. I was like, wait. I swear I saw more yards out of Baker.
So, real quick, tell me how many of these games you found exciting. Buffalo beating Miami 31-10 in week 2. That was an exciting game
matchup
for you? Good matchup. That was the game where Tua literally had his like 20th concussion and they were getting blown out beforehand. New England versus the Jets, which the Jets won 24-3.
But those are divisional matchups, even though the game sucked.
I'm not saying the matchups weren't good. I said the games were terrible.
Let's get back to this thing because we don't have all show because we got just a little bit of time here. The narrative that bugs me coming off last night is, and it's a narrative that's been brewing a long time. I don't know where this. I think it's us protecting ourselves from our fears and from our frustrations. And I think there's a couple things other at play. The match or the narrative coming out that Baker would not have done this in Cleveland might be the most disingenuous narrative I've heard. And I've heard media members trumpet this. I've heard fans trumpet this. I think it is the biggest amount of crap that I've heard. And some of that is letting the team off the hook for running Baker, the most successful quarterback we had had in Cleveland since Bernie or Vinny, however you want to dial it up, running him out of town. If you say that, you're letting them off the hook. This idea, this one-sided revisionist history that Baker is the only reason Baker isn't here, I'm not saying he didn't need to be humbled. I'm not saying that he didn't have his head up his ass just a little bit or maybe a lot of bit. But what I'm saying is to hear people explain away, well, he couldn't have done that here. He quite literally did that here. He had a bad season in which he played hurt. Everybody got butt hurt, lost perspective, and ran the guy out of town. So while I'm not trying to say Baker was faultless, this narrative of people saying, you know what, he wouldn't have done it here. He quite literally did. Then he had a bad season, acted a little pouty, and people use things like, well, Myles Garrett, no, like him, to go ahead and run the guy out of town.
I just think the perspective is what's important to have here. Because, like, yes, I don't ever talk about Baker where it's like, well, he would have never done that here. Because to your point, he did have that type of success here. And that last season he was hurt. We don't know what that could have been if he doesn't hurt the shoulder, if things would have gone differently, whatever. I've never once thought that he couldn't be this quarterback here, because I think we saw the early happenings of that with Kevin Stefanski that first year that they were together. And I mean it was you know, sweet symphony music. Like, it was a beautiful thing to watch, and it was fun to see this quarterback that everybody seemed to rally around.
It's now a bittersweet.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Pick. Symphony.
Wait, what? Oh, you're using the actual
Verve song. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, gotcha.
Sorry. Brought it right to a yeah, you were
I
on
was
a roll
on a
there.
Roll, and then keep you just you screwed it up.
You're like Butter. You're on a roll, baby. Keep going.
Anyway, so yeah, like, I believe that he could have been that quarterback here. I do though think that, like, the context of how things fell apart matters, because I like, there's a lot of people who are like, they go the opposite direction with the argument, and they're like, well, they throw their hands up and they're like, see, we should have just kept Baker. But I don't think that it was ever that simple that they could have just kept Baker. Maybe on the surface it looks that way, but if you know more about, like, what went on behind the scenes and all the things that we've heard about how he was viewed in the locker room and all this, like, if that was truly perpetuated into a problem, and he has since talked about he needed to mature a little bit as well on his end of things.
How much time did they give him to reclaim the locker room after they cut Odell Beckham Jr., after holding on to him because they wanted to try and recoup trade value, and then released him after the trade deadline out of desperation? By the way, after Baker's shoulder was hurt.
I'm not saying we have reason to trust this front office or organization for a lot over the years, but in this instance, I do trust them enough to understand, like, what the vibes were like in that locker room.
No,
like,
come on. I mean, that is such a team-friendly thing.
But I'm being serious, though, man.
They didn't draft him. Kevin clearly couldn't handle Baker's personality. There's so many things here that if you're saying, well, the Browns made the right... No, the Browns talked themselves into being desperate. They got nothing for the guy who had been the best quarterback since 1989. And now the guy's playing the way they said he couldn't play, and the guy they traded for, we're talking about low-hanging fruit. Well, okay, passed for 187 yards, but if that touchdown hadn't been called back, he would have finally gotten over 200 yards.
I don't think that the organization, though, is saying that he couldn't have played at that level. I think they felt he could after that first year with Stefanski. You just laid it out. Like, they clearly saw that type of play that first year they were together. So I don't think it was about they don't think they can get that play out of Baker.
Then why did they move on from
Baker? I think they thought they I think A, they felt like they needed even better quarterback play. I think they were like big fish hunting. They were like, or big game hunting. That's those are two different phrases.
I like hunting big fish and I like fishing big hunts.
I think they were big game hunting where they were like, yeah, Baker's good. And we feel like we can do a lot with him, but I also think we can get better. And then Deshaun was the big fish of that class that was going to be a free agent. It was like, let's go do this thing, which is why I've never blamed them for the act of trying to upgrade the quarterback position. It's just maybe who they brought in his place.
So just real quick, because we're keeping that perspective in mind, they made the decision to move off of Baker, and then they went after Deshaun. How do I remember this? Because there was the adult in the room tweet or report or whatever that was. There was a report. And then they had sealed the fate. We're done with Baker. That was after they got excluded from the conversation with Deshaun. Remember? That adult in the room thing came out right in the window between Deshaun saying, I'm not going to Cleveland, and Deshaun miraculously, when $230 million guaranteed showed up on his doorstep, suddenly did that.
So but that's the thing. When you have a $230 million guarantee in your back pocket, maybe they knew that no matter who they pursued, they were going to be able to convince him to come here. That, like, if they went into that fight and they were like, we have this ace up our sleeve of we are going to go all in on getting one of these guys, maybe they weren't worried about what it was going to look like without Baker Mayfield. Like, they felt confidently they were going to get one of these guys.
So was it the locker room or was it Deshaun?
Well, that was point number two. I think that they both thought that – I think it was on two fronts. I think they believed that they needed to upgrade the position, or they wanted to upgrade the position at least somewhat better than Baker, even though they had success with him. And I do think that there was this internal conflict in the locker room where clearly the locker room was split on him. And if they didn't think they could salvage that, they didn't think they could salvage that. I really am not trying to make an excuse for the organization.
Well, no, because this isn't even about why they moved on from Baker. This is about the revisionist history that is, well, he wouldn't have done that here. Literally, he did that, played hurt, had a bad season, acted like a jagaloon. I'm not going to defend the personal behavior. But teams all the time, we act as if guys waltz into the NFL at quarterback at 21 years old and are mature. The Browns failed Baker in having, what was it, 5 offensive coordinators in 5 seasons. The Browns failed Baker by doing the thing of, well, we're going to make you sing for your supper. We're not going to give you stability, which then probably put more emphasis on him playing through the injury. And then because they didn't draft him and because I don't think they knew how to handle his personality, it became, well, we got to get an adult in the room and you traded for this. I'm not trying to hammer the trade. I get it that a lot of teams in the NFL, if not all of them, face value would take Deshaun over Baker when the trade was made. But this new thing of, well, Baker wouldn't have done that here. The same people uttering that are the people who bought hook, line, and sinker, the hooey that was sold by the organization that, oh, well, this is all on Baker, and Baker's divisive in the locker room. Okay, then change the locker room. When you have a quarterback, you change the locker room. You don't change the quarterback. And then you've spent the last 3 years in the quarterbackless abyss. Well, 2 years in the quarterbackless abyss. I'm not trying to be a Baker homer on this, but specifically the narrative that I think is
secretly
crap,
a closet Baker bro over here.
Not so closeted. The thing that I hate is this narrative. If you want to say, hey, they made the trade. Fine. But if you want to say Baker couldn't have done this, he had done this in the midst of massive instability, and they used the crap they put him through the first 3 years to then be like, well, he can't do it. He did. When he finally got stability, he did. When he was healthy here, the last 2 years, he was pretty damn good.
And again, I'm not the people saying that I'm not part of the group of people that are saying he couldn't have done that here. I'm just saying I do think there were reasons why they moved on. And it's not like, Nick, we haven't seen other players here and elsewhere around the NFL that just aren't a fit with a team, and they move off of those players. I get maybe it's not at the quarterback position, but like Jadeveon Clowney comes to mind. That was a personality that the second time he came back, started ruffling some feathers. They didn't jive with that. They got him out of here. I think this happens more often than we think. And if he just wasn't a fit and you felt like you had to sort of salvage things within the team, I get why they chose that path on some level.
Would this Baker Mayfield have been possible in Cleveland? Jim Costa of The Ticket in Detroit next on 92.3 The Fan. But I guess we're going to start this call by me apologizing to my friend, because I know we set this up yesterday, but I, like 4 times today, I intended to say, hey, Jim, still good for 440? All right, buddy. See you then. Jim Costa of 97 won The Ticket in Detroit. He does mornings with former NFL player. Michigan alum, John Jansen. Great show. Great dude. Jim Costa joins us now on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Jim, welcome to the show. Sorry I forgot to text you because my brain doesn't work.
Hey, guys, what's up? Don't worry about it. I took my nap. I'm all well-rested. Let's do this.
And, of course, I have to do this on a Friday. It's not like your weekend started like 7 hours ago because you're a morning show. let's start with this Tigers-Guardians ALDS. Why have the Tigers been able to make the run that they have?
It's inexplicable. I remember coming on with you guys around the deadline going, this team's not going to be able to go on a run. Me and just about everybody in the city of Detroit thought this team was dead in early August. And post-trade deadline, they had a two-man rotation, a young group that had, when all was said and done, about 12 rookies. And they did it with what we thought was smoke and mirrors, but they did the extreme example of what we've seen these analytic teams do with openers and Super Bowl pens. And they just started picking up momentum, playing matchups, and the Tigers caught fire down the stretch, and now it feels like they're invincible.
Jim, we obviously know how great Skubal is as the ace of the Tiger staff and chance to potentially win the Cy Young here coming up in a couple weeks. Aside from him, because we know there's a chance that this thing goes five, that he'll pitch twice in the series, who is the player that needs to step up the most or needs to have a big series if the Tiger streak is going to continue?
Well, first of all, it's not a hypothetical. Skubal's going to win. It's not going to be Class A, right? I mean, this is his Cy Young Award. Sorry to break
you know what?
That.
Here's another good question. If you could only have one, because we had a host here at our station who threw out the idea of Hinch potentially winning Manager of the Year. If you can only have one, Manager of the Year or the Cy Young, and the Guardians get the other, which one would you rather see the Tigers get?
Oh man, you're busting my stones with that one because they both really do deserve it. The job they did at the end of the season, AJ pressing all these buttons. So let me use AJ Hinch as a way to answer that original question because it all goes through the supercomputer that is his managerial might. He has played every matchup to a T this stretch. And if you looked at the key in this matchup, yes, Skubal should throw game two, confirm that today, would throw game five should it get there. Who else needs to step up? The way AJ's built this team, he's taken the pressure off all his guys. Everybody will be hand-selected to go into a favorable matchup. They use all 26 guys on the roster, and no one is asked to do anything that they're incapable of doing. So what I mean by that is the Tigers advanced by beating Houston in game two. They pinch hit Andy Ibañez in the biggest at-bat of the game. Andy Ibañez is only asked to hit lefties. They go to Andy Ibañez before the game and they say, how many lefties are in the pen? Prepare for one or two guys for one at-bat. And that's all Andy Ibañez worries about. He comes in for the one at-bat. And the guy that leaves the game, there's no ego. It's a group that trusts what the manager's doing. So no one's going to be asked to be a superhero for the Tigers. They're going to ask each guy to win one teeny tiny matchup, and that's going to cascade and add up over the course of nine innings.
Jim, how much of a conversation on your station was there about whether Skubal should start game one or start game two, which is the way it's going to be?
Yeah, I can only speak for my show. Our show had no debate at all. I didn't hear anybody push for Skubal to throw on what would be short rest for game one, and it's because the series lays out where you'd still get them twice on regular rest. And because the series sets up the way it does with off days after games one, two, and after games four, it does allow them to still manipulate the pitching staff the way they want to do it.
So, Jim, I'll go back to my original question of just who...
Wait, which one of the three that you asked him in that 30-second stretch?
I asked him two questions. He answered the one about the manager. I want to know, other than Skubal, who is the player that you think has to have a big series if the Tigers are going to continue their run throughout the playoffs?
I answered the question I wanted to answer. you know how that works. We've all done these interviews. If you throw two questions at an athlete, they'll answer the one that's most convenient. Yeah, you wanted me to pick Skubal or Hinch. You wanted me to pick someone other than Skubal. I would tell you the longer these playoff series start to go, they are going to need another guy to be able to reliably pitch multiple innings in a bulk reliever role. And the guy that I would immediately look to is Reese Olson, who I think is that next starter, even if he doesn't start a game, but the next bulk reliever that should be called upon if the series goes, you know, as many as four or five games.
Jim, I don't know if you know this, but because I think you're on TikTok. I'm on TikTok now at Nick Wilson
Says. He calls it Nick-tok.
Yeah, it's Nick-tok. And I got to tell you, buddy, I tweeted something. I TikToked something. I posted something about the Guardians and Tigers. And Tigers fans are like in my mentions right now. It's okay because it's inflating the views that I get. We're good with it. But there's just a hubris here. Like, is this the most confident you've seen Tigers fans in, like, 15 years? Because I got to say, a lot of chest pounding going on from your people here.
You know what it is? It's the idea when you're 17 and you're invincible and nothing can go wrong. That's exactly how it feels for this baseball team and the way the city feels. It's house money. If they lose, it's still the best season in a decade. Playoffs are back. We're getting a home playoff game at least on Wednesday. Yeah, it's a chesty crowd, I would say. I mean, when I was texting you yesterday, I'll share this. I feel like it's going to be 1-1 at worst, if not 2-0, because you got Scooble, best pitcher on planet Earth, on Monday, and this belief is there's really not a drop-off when they go bullpen days. So if they can take game one, throw the hammer game two, it's 2-0 party on Wednesday. If they lose game one, it's Scooble game two, even things up, swing games at home on Wednesday. It hasn't really entered many people's minds that they would lose this series, which is crazy given where we were 2 months ago.
So, Jim, going off of your what seems like some confidence that you also have, like Detroit fans, in this series for the Tigers, if the Guardians were to win and advance on to play the Yankees, are Tigers fans willing to accept cheering for a division rival because it's against the Yankees if they in the next round?
If the Tigers lose, which you blew my mind with that, I didn't know that was a possibility. If the Tigers lose...
They don't do that anymore, not lately.
I know. What's losing? If the Tigers lose, we will move headfirst into Lions season, and we won't acknowledge playoff baseball.
You know, I can't really be mad about that.
That was such a beat around the bush answer.
No, because here's the thing. I have pledged that even if the Tigers beat the Guardians in this series, as long as they're facing the Yankees in the next series, I'm going to have to root for the Tigers. There's a part of me that probably will just die inside, and I'll probably just ignore baseball until next, let's say March. So there's a part of me that I think I'm right where you are.
Let me just answer this. I don't think we're rooting for Cleveland.
Hmm. Is there a rivalry between our two cities?
When it's convenient, yeah, I think so.
Like, I remember in the aughts, there was an Indians-Tigers thing, but it quickly dissipated. I remember there was an Indians-Twins thing before that, but I don't really know who the division rivals are for either of us anymore.
Well, it kind of is a moving target, and I don't know if you saw this, but the Tigers and Guardians are meeting in the postseason for the first time ever. Now, obviously, throughout history, you couldn't. Only one team was going to make it from the division. But the idea that these two teams have played each other over 2,000 times but never in the postseason – it should be a rivalry, right? Proximity, Michigan, Ohio. You couldn't even acknowledge my co-host went to Michigan without a sour look on your face. Yeah, there's a rivalry here.
Jim, going back to the matchup, just sort of on the surface here, we know both these teams do certain things well for the Tigers with Scooble obviously being at the forefront of their rotation. That's a strength for them, for the Guardians, their bullpen. Is that the thing that worries you the most for Detroit in this series, the bullpen, or is there something else that maybe raises some red flags in terms of how these two teams stack up?
Yeah, two things for Cleveland that would concern me if I allowed myself to be concerned. It would be, one, yes, Class A, no doubt about it. I mean, the Tigers have a ton of comebacks in them. They're a scrappy team, but he doesn't allow any of that. So that's first. You can't find yourself trailing in the eighth, the ninth inning, the high leverage stuff, because Class A, while not the Cy Young Award winner, is a hell of a pitcher. And then the other one is he always kills us. He kills everybody in the division. It's Jose Ramirez. I mean, AJ Hinch has shown this season even. He'll just throw up the four fingers. I'm not letting him beat us. But if there's traffic on the bases, if you can't swap out a pitcher because he hasn't faced the three batter minimum, Jose Ramirez is the stuff of nightmares for everybody in the Central.
You know, you're such a nice guy, and you're coming on my show, and that's fair. You know, we got a series going on here. You're a little cocky. I'm starting to feel the need and the urge to lock in a game one Guardians win over your Motor City Kitties.
You're locking
there, Jim.
It in.
You're jamming me up, and I'm going to jam you back.
I think you're projecting a little bit. I sense some fear from Clevelanders.
Oh, now we're doing armchair
you know
analyst. Now you're
you know
really.
What it is? He heard your segment last week about
which one,
whether or not you'd rather face Detroit or Houston.
Yeah, I said bring on the Tigers, fella.
He did. He said bring on the Tigers. So
why
he's
would
not,
you say that?
Why? But because the Tigers weren't the Astros.
He likes things getting clipped and used against him on social media.
Yeah, that too.
Why would you say that? That just seems so silly. Like, I can't explain to you. This team is a freight train. You don't want to mess
You've
with
won
this.
We've two playoff games.
Like, no, hold on. They've won 31 of the final, whatever it was, 43 games to close the season.
Sorry, buddy. How many of those were against the Rockies, A's, White Sox, and other teams that sucked?
Plenty were against the Royals and the Orioles, who both made the playoffs. They also took a series against the Yankees during this crazy, ridiculous
Guardians
stretch.
Didn't do that.
I'll give you one.
Okay, I'll take the one.
All right, real quick here. I am trying to change baseball with this microphone, with the pressure that I put on the powers that be. When expansion comes, can I get you behind a Guardians, Tigers, Reds, and Pirates in all geographically relevant rivalry division?
Yeah, I'm down. Is the collective spend from those four teams going to be $100 million?
I believe the Tigers are going to have to be capped because they might be the one franchise that actually hits north of 100.
No, but I don't know if you realize. I know you guys have done this radio before. I wish your team would spend more money. The Tigers' payroll for the wild card roster was a combined $18.8 million.
That doesn't sound great.
No, it's all young dudes. It's rookies. It's guys who haven't even hit, like in the case of Scooble, true arbitration or true free agency. It's as lean a team. Javi Baez, who thankfully is not on the playoff roster, makes more than the rest of the playoff roster.
Jim?
Sounds like a John Fisher wet dream to me.
I said it a week ago, and I'm going to say it right now to your face. Bring on the Tigers.
Mm. I'm sorry you did that. I'm sorry to Cleveland that you did that. Guys,
we don't learn at the station, Jim. We don't learn. A couple years ago, I was doing the Cavs thing, and I said, bring on the Knicks. We had a host here who said, bring on the Yankees a couple years ago.
Yeah, but the Knicks were good. The Yankees were good.
The Tigers
were pretty
good.
Just a cute little story.
Well, the Tigers were hot, but now they're hot and good. You can't be a team that's hot exclusively and rally the way they did from death's doorstep to get to the postseason. I don't know how else to put it. I mean, they're pitching, they're running, they're playing good defense, they're doing all the hallmarks of playoff baseball. I wouldn't want any part of this hot baseball team or this good baseball team.
I remember my first beer. And, you know, people say when people think of hot and good, they think of Nick Wilson and they think of Jim Costa. Be good, buddy.
Thanks, Jim.
Be good, guys. Thanks.
Oh, I did it again. God bless. And I did it to my fan, my buddy. I almost said fan.
My biggest fan. I did. My
God bless it.
My biggest fan in Detroit, Michigan.
I am Michael Martinez in this radio right now. Great stuff with Jim Costa on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. If you guys haven't listened to his show, he is awesome. Him and John Jansen, great together. 97.1, The Ticket in Detroit. We got the 5 at 5 next on 92.3 The Fan. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.